For example, I had a VC telling myself, you know, the problem with women founders is it's that it's hard for them to fire people. And when you are running a startup and scaling up, you need to be able to fire people. And I was like, I think women are able to fire people, but okay.
Welcome to Inno Podcast. My name is Khalil Bauer, head of Espas Lab, Swiss Post's innovation lab. 88% of all startup investments in France did go to a male-only team. And my today's guest changes that. Deborah Loy did her bachelor at the University of Fribourg in Switzerland, her master's degree at Sciences Po in Paris. She worked as a journalist, for example, for La Liberté in Fribourg and Les Echos in Paris. 2020, she joined the organization Sista as CEO, which creates data about the gender gap in startup funding and help venture capitalists to work on the gender gap in their own portfolio. What female founders experience when they go on a roadshow to get some funding? What biases are the core of the problem and how we all can work on that? Deborah will share with you now. Subscribe to the Inno Podcast in your podcast app. Leave us 5 stars on Apple Podcasts and Spotify. And now, enjoy this episode with Deborah. Hi, Deborah. Thanks for joining me today.
Hi, Khalil. Thank you so much for coming to Paris to see me. I'm super happy to be with you guys today.
Of course. In a nutshell, what is Sista?
So Sista is an organization that aims at reducing the funding gap between male and female entrepreneurs. It was founded by women that were founders or investors and that felt a little bit alone in the tech world here in France, in the French tech. And they wanted to understand if this feeling was an objective one. So they begin to create data on the topic and they realize that there is a real funding gap between male and female entrepreneurs. So that's why they launched Sista 3 years ago. And I joined a year and ago, and I joined a year and a half ago to structure the organization and build our communities and everything we'll talk about later, I think.
Okay, we will do that. Probably before we talk in detail about what you guys are actually doing, you mentioned that the female founders and investors, that they notice that the data says, okay, there is a big gap besides the data. Can you describe a little bit what they actually experienced when they were looking for funding?
Yeah, so there is clear data that shows that when you are a woman, you have less chances to be funded than when you are a man, right? And how does that translate in the real world? It translates by female founders going to roadshows. So you know what we call the roadshow is the moment when you begin to raise funds. So you go and meet all those investors and present your project and pitch it to them, blah, blah, blah. And at that moment, we know
So roadshow, just to be sure, roadshow doesn't mean me as a founder and with my startup, for weeks or even months or probably longer, I just travel around going to several events and always pitch, and to get people excited, to get investors excited so that they actually are interested in funding me.
Yeah, you meet actually, it's mostly one-on-one meetings with investors. It usually lasts, I don't know, like 4 to 9 months, I would say. So it's a long process. It's a tiring process because you get a lot of no's. You need to know that a VC invests in 3% of the companies they hear from. So it's really small, right? So as a founder, you need to go for like various months to see a lot of different investors. When I say VC, it's venture capitalists, right? So you have to go and see a lot of those VCs, meet with them and pitch your project. And hopefully a few of them are going to accept to finance your project and then you're going to be able to scale it.
Okay. And when they are on this roadshow, what do they experience and why is that so hard for female founders to get funding?
So a lot of investors are male. For example, we know that in Paris, of the big funds, half of them have no female partner. Okay, so partner being
at all,
none. So half of the major VC French funds have no female partner, right? So that means that when you are a female founder and you go on your roadshow, you meet mostly men, okay? Which is already not really okay, because you would like to meet more diverse people and maybe you would feel more comfortable meeting more diverse people. And the fact that those men have been working together with other men for so many years means they are biased. And they tend to be less able to project success on you when you're a woman, and to question more your ambition, and to question more your risk aversion than if you were a male, okay? So they ask you different questions. And I mean, it's already hard to pitch a project to an investor, even if you're a man founder, right? But when you're a woman, you are way, way more challenged. And so this is the, I would say, best case scenario. The worst case scenario is that you experience sexism during the fundraising process. We unfortunately have a lot of entrepreneurs coming to us. I mean, I won't go into details because, of course, it's confidential, but we do have a lot of founders that come to us and tell us stories of things that have been said that are honestly absolutely not okay to hear when you're a founder and you're pitching your project. So this is the worst case scenario, right? But mainly all women have the impression to be taken less seriously. And when I say the impression, it's because I hear it from them directly, but it has actually been proved by scientific studies in the US, for example. Some researchers have been digging into it and realized that VCs really do not ask the same questions to women than to men.
Okay, so there were quite a lot of points. Probably starting with the worst one. I know you already mentioned this is confidential, but what can I imagine when you say in worst case scenario they experience sexism? What does it mean?
Well, worst case scenario, you can imagine what it means, and I won't go into it, but you know, there's an organization called Moving Forward in the States that was created in order to stop sexual harassment from VCs to female founders.
Really?
Yeah, so it's called Moving Forward. They're doing a great job. It was founded by five women who have themselves experienced sexual harassment from VC while being a founder. So, I mean, they lived it, they went through it. So, of course, the worst case scenario is unfortunately this one. I mean, fortunately, it doesn't happen all the time, but of course, when you have a position of power, you can always fear that something like that could happen. And it has happened in the States, it has been documented, it has been, so Moving Forward has been created to try to avoid it. So maybe sometimes in Europe we'll also hear about stuff like that. Then the most of the time it doesn't go as far, fortunately, but it's sexist remarks. I mean, of course, you can imagine that you will question a woman about her family, for example. You know, if you have like a 30 years old woman, you're gonna ask her, but how are you gonna run your company if you wanna have children? Even if you don't know if she does wanna have children, if she's able to have children, and if maybe she has someone else at home that could actually take care of the kids, because, you know, it doesn't have to be all women. So it's a lot of questions about maternity, about how to handle it. And of course, it's questioning the ambition, like saying, as a woman, should you really, would you really have the nerves to run a company that's going to become a unicorn? You know, what we call a unicorn in the tech sector is a company that is valorized $1 billion, right? So do you really have the nerves to do that? Do you really have the nerves to fire people? For example, I had a VC telling myself, you know, the problem with women founders is that it's hard for them to fire people. And when you are running a startup and scaling up, you need to be able to fire people. And I was like, I think women are able to fire people, but okay. So, you know, it's all the stereotypes, imagining a woman less ambitious, more preoccupied by her personal life with children, less able to take risk, less able to be harsh, you know, when she needs to be towards her teams and so on. So it's basically all the stereotypes that women hear while they're raising funds.
And why is that? Why do female founders get these questions you already mentioned, these questions like, assuming that women are less risk-taking, less willing to fire people if necessary, having the nerve scaling up to get a $1 billion company, and all the things you mentioned. Why do female founders get these questions asked?
So maybe I'm going to ask you a question, if you don't mind. If I ask you to imagine a successful tech founder.
Damn it.
What do you imagine?
I have Elon Musk in mind.
Yeah. Or even if I tell you to imagine like a fictional successful tech founder.
It would be still Elon Musk.
It would be a man at least, you know?
Yeah.
You would not like imagine a woman. And that's because we've been living in a society where those sectors such as tech, such as finance, had been run by males. You know, if you think of what we call the GAFAs, I mean, we should call them the GAMAs, right? No, it's Google, Amazon, Microsoft, and now Meta. Those companies have all been created by men. So it's absolutely normal that we're all biased and we imagine less women in those roles than we should. Also, if you look at, you know, the movies we've been seeing from when we were children, every CEO has always been a man, right? In the movies you've been seeing, in the news you've been reading, so your surrounding has made you think that successful CEOs, successful founders could only be men. So you are biased, and of course, yeah, in the movies especially when I think, so I grew up in Switzerland, right? And when I think of my surrounding as a child, it was still women staying at home, taking care of their children. And all the narrative around women was mostly about that. And even in the fictions, in the movies, in the books, you know, it was always, you need to be a good mother, you need to be caring. And a guy has to provide for his family. So he has to hustle and, you know, get this great job and he can be a CEO and so on. So we all have these those pictures in mind that it's really difficult for us to detach from, you know. And VCs, of course, they have the same ideas, and mostly because VC, so venture capital, is at a crossing path between finance and tech, which are two very male present sectors. So they basically were used to working with men only for years, right? And then they realized that there is a problem. Sista has been doing a lot of work to make them realize that, you know, showing them the data. For example, in 2021 in France, 88% of funds invested in startups has been directed to male-only funded companies. Okay, 88%, so it's huge. So when you put those data in front of their eyes, they realize that there is a problem and now they're trying to address it, but it's difficult to change the way you see the world, to change your stereotypes, you know?
You mentioned a number, 88%, and you also mentioned that you, that Sista actually creates data to validate the point that there is this gap. Can you share us a few numbers and figures about that?
Yeah, absolutely. So I can tell you about the last study we did with BCG, so a very serious company.
BCG, like Boston Consulting Group.
Yes, absolutely. There are some good news. For example, we see that there are more and more diverse funding teams. There was in 2021 in France 16% of startups that were funded by both male and female founders together, and 8% funded by female-only funders. So it is 76% of startups still funded by male-only founders, right? But it's getting better. It's 9 points more if you talk about the mixed and female teams together. So it means the teams in which there is at least one woman in the funding team. For those teams, it's 9 points more than what we have been observing between 20 than what we have been observing between 2008 and 2018, right? So it's getting better. The dynamic is a good one, so we can be happy about that, right? Then also another good news, because I like good news, is that if we go on like that, parity in founding teams will be reached in 2055. Okay, is it a good news? It's still far away, right? But it's 35 years earlier than what we expected 3 years ago. So we gain 35 years in 3 years since the creation of Sista. So it's a good news. I mean, of course, we still have a lot of effort to do, but if we go on at that path, we could, you know, have a parity in a few years if we go on with that dynamic. I've been telling you, the really alarming thing we've seen, well, obviously, I already mentioned the stock, 88% of funds going to male-only funded companies. It means that the French tech is still very male-driven. Another bad news is that you have no fundraising over 50 million euros that are made by women. It, there's none so far. So we hope to see them coming. In the unicorns, if you talk unicorns, there are 26 in France now, and there is only one that has been founded by two women, right? Co-founded by two women and three men, if I'm correct. But last year, we have seen no female founded startup raising over 50 million. So that's a big problem. And another very alarming data that we showed with the Boston Consulting Group is that the funding for all female teams is deteriorating, right? So when you're all female, when you're two or three women founding a startup, you have 4.3 X's less chances to raise funds than if you're only male. So I think it is a really important data, right? It means that when you're a mixed team and you go see a VC, it's still okay. And maybe they're happy because they think, oh, there's a woman and we want more diversity. But if you're two women or three women, then you are really, your chances are less important to actually raise funds, right? 4.3 times less, it's a lot. So it really shows that that VCs are biased, right? And they have trouble trusting women-only led companies so far.
So what I understood so far, when we look at venture funds, you mentioned and described that that VCs, venture capital firms, they are in the mixture of technology and finance.
Yeah.
Both words which were, or maybe still are, dominated by males for decades or even more. And because they are dominated by male, it's when you pitch to a venture fund or venture capital fund that you, the chances are quite high that you will always have to deal with a male member of this firm. And can you describe a little bit how do they actually work? What I already learned is that they only accept 3% of the pitches they get. They're very male dominated in this world between tech and finance. But can you describe us a little bit how does their daily business look like?
So what we have to know is that a venture capitalist doesn't invest his own money. He invests the money of other people. Other people meaning mostly pension funds or big corporate companies that are actually giving them their money to invest in startups, right? So they have to give a return on investment to what we call their own investors. They'll call the LPs. It's called the limited partners, right? So basically, they also need to report to someone, right? It's not only their own money they're investing. So how does it work? If for example, tomorrow I decide to raise a fund, right? To raise my own VC fund, I'm going to go see those pension funds, those corporates, Maybe I'm going to see the post and I'm going to say, hi, I'm raising a fund. Do you want to give me 10 million? And of course, you're going to say, yes, Khalil, because, you know, you like me, right? He's not making a good face. So I'm going to go see those corporates and those pension funds. And they're going to, you know, if I'm good enough, they're going to give me money. And then I'm going to have, for example, let's say 100 million to invest in startups, right? To do so, I have 10 years, okay? So the first 5 years, I'm investing. It's my investment time. So I'm investing in startups, I'm meeting a lot of founders, investing in them, blah, blah, blah. And then I have 5 years to exit the startups, hoping that, you know, I will have multiplied the money I put in during the first 5 years. So it's a really short-term thinking, you know? So this is the basic way funds work. Of course, you have funds that, you know, find ways with raising other funds to follow their startups a little bit longer than just 5 years. But basically, it's what they are expecting. So when you go see a VC fund, the first thing they look at is basically, is your company able to become a unicorn, the unicorn we talked about, or more, you know, because it's thanks to those companies that are going to be valorized way more in a few years that they're going to make money and that they're going to be able to make their own investors happy by giving them a lot of money. So basically, that's how it works. So what does it mean for a startup? It means that when you begin, so I create my startup tomorrow, for example, and I'm going to need funds to exist because I want to do, let's say, a SaaS company, you know, so a very techie company, services company. And
SaaS company meaning software as a service company,
absolutely,
software
yeah.
providing company.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. So I'm going to create this platform, and first thing I'm going to do is I'm going to ask my friends and family to give me a little money just to be able to do, you know, the first version of my product. And then when I have it, I need to scale it. So I need to hire people. I need to put money, you know, in the development of the product, in the marketing and everything. So for that, I'm going to begin to see investors, right? I'm going to do various rounds. I'm going to do first my what we call the seed round. So it's going to be, you know, a little money. And then I'm going to do my Series A, if everything goes right, my Series B, my Series C, blah, 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 blah. And so at every round, I invite new investors to come in and I give money back to my old investors, right? So for example, my investor who entered in my seed round and who gave me the money at that time.
How much is it about in a seed?
In France, honestly, it's been going a little crazy. We've seen, so it's hard to say because it can be between 500K and 10 million, right? Because we have some companies today raising 10 million euros on a seed round, which is a little insane. But usually it's around, let's say, 1 to 2 million. Okay. So I raise 1 million, for example, for my seed with my first investor. And then I go to my Series A. Maybe my investor can follow on that, so he still gives me money. Then I go to my Series B, and I find this great intern, and I'm raising, let's say, I don't know, 100 million for my Series B. And I find this great international investor and he says, okay, I want to invest in your company, but I want to get rid of the other investors because I want to be, you know, on board, have the majority to be on board. So he's going to, you know, pay. I mean, the other investors are going to get their share of the money. If it has gone really well, they're going to have, I don't know, 10 X's, for example, the money they put in on my seed round, and they're going to exit my company. And they are going to themselves be able to give the money back to their investors. So that's basically how it works.
And when I have that in mind, how VC works, so to make it very, very easy, investing in a startup, hoping that a startup becomes successful, meaning that the shares I have becomes way more valuable in about 5 years, way more than I actually invested in, so that when the next investing round starts, that I can sell my share, have way more money, give a part back to my pension fund, to corporate, or whoever started investing, giving me money to invest. And of course, probably a little bit for myself to celebrate the exit or whatever.
You have what's called management fees and carried interest. We do go back to the team of investment. It is not charity, of course.
Oh, yeah. Based on your experiences, what are the biases at VCs you mentioned and you did probably which you observed?
So as I told you, the main bias I observed is the fact that it's basically what's called in a scientific language, it's called implicit stereotype bias. So it means that, for example, if you
have... Implicit stereotype bias.
Yeah, implicit stereotype bias. So basically, I'm a woman. If the stereotype you have about a woman, for example, is she should stay home and take care of her children, then you're going to think I should stay home and take care of my children. If you think women are weaker than men, then because I'm a woman, you're going to think I'm weak, you know. Which, obviously, if I was Serena Williams, would not be the case. But you still apply this stereotype because the stereotype you have about women is they are weak, okay? So basically, the stereotypes you have about a type of person, a group, in general, you apply to every person that's part of that group. You know what I mean? And, of course, it's wrong. You know, I took the Serena Williams example because I think it's interesting. Statistically, women are probably less strong than men physically, okay? But if you take Serena Williams and you go see her and you tell her she's physically weak...
that doesn't work.
You're going to be absolutely wrong. So this is a stereotype, you know, this is the fact that you imply that every person of the group has, you know, what the majority of the group has. So it's a bias that we've been seeing a lot in VCs. There's a lot of what we call lack of counterfactual thinking, okay?
Lack of?
Counterfactual thinking. So it's, for example, because the man you invested in succeeded, you think that they are better than the women you didn't fund, okay? But you didn't give them the same chances, okay? So... I mean, because a lot of people tell us, yeah, but we invest in men, but look, it works because, you know, we have our exes back and blah, blah, blah. But you don't know what would have happened if you actually invested in the women. Maybe it would have worked better, you know. It's also what you can call the survivor bias, right? You only see the survivors and you think, you know, this is the right thing to do. But you don't know how many men failed and you don't know how many women would have succeeded even better than the men who succeeded if you had given them the chances. So that's basically, yeah, the main biases, I guess, we see in the VCs.
And what do you do?
So what do we do? So we know it is a structural problem. So we are trying to address it in a structural way, which means we do a lot of things. We work with female founders. We try to teach them how to raise funds, how to have the right codes, how to have killer pitch decks that no one can say no to. So we have a community called Sista Entrepreneur, and this is our community for female founders. Then we have all the data part that we talked about. We also have public policies actions. For example, we worked with a French deputy called Marie-Pierre Rixon on a law that was actually... passed, so we were super happy a few months ago. So we got to make, you know, legislative advances in France. And we also have the part in which we work with VCs. It's called Sista Investor Allies. So we have all those funds that come to work with us on their biases. So, for example, last September, we organized this big conference, which more than 100 investors attended, about cognitive biases. So the things we've been talking about to try to basically tell them, you are all biased. We are all biased. Because, you know, as humans, we're made to survive and try to... We need to make decisions fast, you know. When you're in the street walking, you maybe don't realize it, but you're making a lot of decisions and you have to make them fast. And some of the components you won't even see, your brain won't even see because it's not relevant to you. See, for example, if you're in the subway... there's a lot of things happening around you, but if I ask you this morning, what did the people around you in the subway wear? you don't remember because it's not information that was, you know, important to your brain. So it has been erased. So our brain is made to be optimal and to work, but the counterfactual part of it is that sometimes we forget things or we put things aside that we should actually, you know, have in mind. So that's basically how our brain works, and that's why we're all biased. A great example of biases is optical illusions. If you are, you've already seen optical illusions, right?
I don't know.
You don't know? You've never?
I probably did, but I don't know what it means.
Well, you can Google it. You can Google optical illusion. No, it's super hard to explain, honestly. But it's basically your brain sees something that is not actually... Okay, maybe there's an example that can people can relate to. You know on Twitter, the dress that was blue or white? You
remember? Gosh, yes.
Yeah. Well, this is a typical optical illusion, right? So this is the thing that your brain is telling you something. Well, it depends on whom you ask. So your brain is... So if you type optical illusions on Google and you put image, you're going to find a lot of different things. So basically, your brain tells you something, but it's not the truth, right? And it's super powerful, the optical illusions, to explain the bias, because you are 100% sure you're seeing something, and actually, it's not the thing that's on the screen or on paper, you know? So it's that kind of stuff that we try to explain them, to show them that it's normal to be biased. We are all biased. We can be men, we can be female, we can be feminist, we can be not feminist. We are all biased. But the important thing about our biases is to be aware of it. So we think that first thing first, you need to measure. So you need to know, for example, in your portfolio, what's the percentage of female-funded company? Super important data. When you have that data, you can say, okay, I'm 50%, 50-50, I'm fine. Okay, I'm great, I'm doing great, actually. I'm doing better than the market, I'm great. Okay, I'm 25%. It's basically what the market does. It's good, but it could be better because I would like to reach 50-50, so I'm going to work on that. Or you can realize you are 5%, which is the case of a lot of different fans, and now you need to really do something about it.
And probably just to understand a little better, you mentioned that that there are VCs coming to you in order to get better, to be aware of that and to figure out how to improve. What does them make them doing the, to do this step? Why do they decide, okay, we have a topic, we have an issue, we want to work on that?
It's so they, thanks to SISTA and the data we provided, they realized there was a problem, right? So now why do they want to fix it? As I mentioned, they themselves have investors, right, that are big corporations. And those big corporations actually have some reporting to do on where their money goes. And it's, of course, not good for them to show that the money they're investing in tech is going to only male-funded companies, you know. So, of course, they have a big financial incentive, and what we call the LPs, I mentioned the limited partners, so the one that invest in the VC funds, they are more and more aware of the issue, and they're putting more and more pressure on the VCs to change. So it's a great thing for us, because it's giving us leverage to make the change.
Do you work with limited partners as well?
So we don't so far. We talk with them, of course, but it's something that we might do someday, because we know our interests are definitely aligned. So this has been putting pressure on the VCs. The market has been putting pressure on the VCs as well, because, you know, there is in the French tech, there's a lot of money. It was 10 billion euros invested in the French tech last year, so it's a lot of money. The investors now have to also have a good branding, so that the best funders in France today can choose their investors, basically. So as a funding, as a venture capitalist, you need to be... you need to have a good branding, you know. And of course, today in 2022, not investing in any women is not a good branding, is not a good image. And no one wants to work with you if you are a male-only fan. It's not good for your reputation. If you have a bad reputation, you make bad business, right, basically, in this world. So there's a reputation issue, there's reporting to investors issue, and of course, there are people that actually morally really want to change things, and that when they realized that they were only investing in the same people, which were basically rich white male, they realized they want to change that, you know. So those are basically the three leverages that we can use at Sustat to make them join us. But as I mentioned, I'm really optimistic that things are changing, because so the Sustat Investor Ally, you have to pay to get in, so it's a real, you know, investment for the funds. It's an actual financial investment to be in the community. So that's the first proof that it's 5K per year. Euros. So of course, you know, it's the first proof that it's actually a commitment. But money is.
So, sorry, may I ask how many did that already?
Yeah, 30.
30.
Yeah. Okay. 30 funds, which was a great success for us, because it was the first year we launched this program. You know, so we had no idea if funds would actually. I know we have like tons of funds coming to do the second season, so it's super exciting. We're really happy about that. So they're investing money, which has already proved they're serious, but they're also investing time. I told you we had more than 100 investors from 30 different funds coming in September, spending an entire afternoon learning about their biases. And honestly, of course, money is precious to VCs, but time is even more precious to them. So if they invest time, if they, you know, dedicate an afternoon to that, it shows that they truly have goodwill to make things better. So those are the things that made me quite optimistic.
And what do they learn? Or what do you teach them during this afternoon, for example?
Well, we teach them I don't teach them. We go and take scientists to teach them, like cognitive specialists, economists coming from great universities here in Paris and also Europe, actually, teaching them how their brain works, why we all are biased, why it is normal, and what kind of biases existed. So, you know, I gave you a few examples earlier, and how you can try to detect the bias and how you can try to work on it, basically.
And for example, I found this this counterfactual bias. That was something I was like, yeah, definitely, that's a thing. For example, if I want to work on that, mm-hmm. and I want to not only be aware of it, but to work on that and change it, what can I do?
So it's all about processes, right? So for example, if you hire people, right? You hire people, Khalil, right? Yeah. Well, you have a process to hire them, right? And because I cannot tell you there's an exercise you're going to do for 10 days and then you're not going to have biases anymore. Unfortunately, if that would exist, we would run out of business in 6 months, which I would be happy of, actually, because everyone would do the exercise and it would be solved and it would be amazing. It does not exist. It does not work that way. So the first thing to do is, of course, to measure your hiring funnel, you know, to see how many candidates you get. Do you have diverse candidates enough? If you don't, maybe there's the problem. So how do you advertise for your job desks? Should you change the wording of your job desk? So, you know, you need to, with the data, you need to see at which points you have problems, right? You have lack of diversity in your hiring process. So data measuring is really the first thing to do. Then when you have the data, you see where you lack diversity in your field. And then you take the processes to make sure you will get more diversity. A simple thing, for example, you probably don't have the same biases as a woman that has a different age from yours, okay? So when you hire someone, maybe do the interview together, and then after it, talk about what you thought of the person and try to detect each other's bias, you know? So she's going to tell you, that's what I thought about him, and you're going to tell her, is it accurate or are you biased? And she's going to do the same thing for you. So you can challenge each other's bias. That's something that, you know, can be super interesting to do. Then you can really, you need to create the process.
To really make it clear, to say that, are we talking about a bias here?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, yeah. Make it explicit.
Yeah. So this is a way to be challenged, to work with teammates that are different from you, that have different background, that they're going to have biases as well, but different. So it's a super interesting thing to do. And then it's how you change your process to make sure that it's it's the most biased clear than you, that you can have. For example, if you need to pick someone, can it be hiring or investing in them? Do you have a checklist of the things you're expecting from that person? You know, do you have
the process?
Do you have a clear checklist, an objectifying checklist? You know what I mean? That you can say, okay, this person has 80% of the skills I wanted her to have, or 50% or 100%, but really clear things. Or do you just arrive in the interview, chat with the person and see how you feel about them, which would be the most biased thing, you know? When you hear a pitch from a founder, do you come with a clear checklist of, I want that size of market, I want that my market share, I want blah, 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 blah. And do you really, you know, stay with it? Or do you expect them to have a good vibe, to be nice, to be beautiful? And you, does it change your perception of them? If someone, like, even physically is nice to you, does it change your perception of this person or not? And this is a really, I think, thrilling intellectual adventure that you can take with yourself to rethink your decision process and try to make it more the most objective as you can. So it's all about rethinking your processes and, yeah, trying to make them as clear as possible. And when you have a feeling towards someone, whether it's good or bad, and you need to hire or invest in them, really try to think, is it my biases talking, or do I have objective reasons to think that about
that
person?
How can I do that? How can I take that step back and ask myself if I do have a bias in the situation?
Well, I mean, if you have clear criteria, I think it's the best way to, you know, if you have clear criteria, then you can know. Like if someone clicks with 100% of your criteria and you still have a bad feeling about them, maybe it's your biases. And the more you do this exercise, the more you are able to understand when you're biased, you know. But it takes time, of course. It takes a lot of time. And, you know, just the exercise we did together before when I told you, imagine a successful CEO. So maybe I should have said, imagine a fictional successful CEO. Try to say that and imagine a woman and see what it does to your brain. At the beginning, it's going to be maybe weird. You're going to be like, oh, okay, I was not expecting that. But maybe the more you do that, the more normal it's going to become for you. You know, I've been, okay, I shouldn't say that on a podcast because I don't know if people should know that, but I've been binge-watching, nobody's listening. I've been binge-watching Bridgerton, the TV show. Okay. It's a little silly, but I still loved it. What I loved about Bridgerton is that Shonda Rhimes put a black woman being the queen, you know. The Queen of England in Bridgerton is a black woman. And I think this is genius because that's something that a white person would never thought of doing. And a lot of people could think, oh, but there never was a black woman Queen of England, so it's not okay. It's fiction, you do whatever you want, right? And I think it's super powerful to have the diversity they have in the Bridgerton show, because it says to your mind, hey, we could have a black woman Queen of England, so maybe we could have a black woman president of France someday, or of Switzerland, you know, in the Conseil Fédéral, we could have black people, you know. And the fact that she's doing that through fiction, I find it super powerful, and I think it's going to unbias a lot of people.
That's a good one.
Yeah. That's, yeah, maybe just don't tell anyone I'm binge-watching Bridgerton, because I don't feel really clever when I say that, but well.
That's okay. So what I understood so far, that you do, for example, with BCG, you publish studies, create data to make people aware of it. Okay, guys, there's something going on. Then you have VCs becoming a member of your community, paying money, investing time in these trainings to be aware of that they do have biases and how they can work on that. And if we probably go one step forward, and so when we talk about Swiss Post is a public company in Switzerland, and we are, well, there were several people from our board and top management already on this podcast, to be very honest, who said we are not good on that topic and we do want to get better. And during the last couple of years, we did get better. And I have to read these numbers because I still don't have them on top of my mind. So in 2021, we had about 44% of our employees were female, 22% in middle management, almost 20% in top management. And we do also have a VC arm of Swiss Post, which the numbers are more or less quite similar. So there's 30% of the management positions in all the portfolio in startups are female. Unfortunately, only 8% female co-founding. And then we have, for example, Jabbatical with Caroli Hindrix, which we invested last year, yes, in 2021. And with Raphael and Ender and the venturing team, I know they do want to work on that and want to get better. And Swiss Post in general as well. The question is now, what can you probably give us in three advices, since we are kind of a limited partner, maybe somehow, somewhere? And what are your three advices for us to get better on this topic?
So the first thing, and I think you did it because you just said the numbers, is to measure, right? And it's super important to keep measuring every year the proportion of women you have in your employees, in your funding teams you invest in, and so on. Because without it, you cannot realize if there's a problem or not, right? So I think you should really systematize. You should have someone, you know, data analyst like that dedicates part of his activity once a year to really measure what's going on in the company. And that would really be the first step. We used to say at Sista that measure precedes action, right? So when you know the numbers, then you can work on them and you can set objectives, right? You can set goals. So now you have the figures. Maybe you say, so how many female founding, you said 8%?
8%.
Yeah. Okay. So
the founding team.
Yeah, so the founding team, you have 8%, so maybe the goal for next year is going to be 15%, you know, and then in 2 years it's going to be 20%. And so you set goals for yourself. And, well, a thing that works really well is to financially incentivize people to reach those goals, of course, you know, whether it's in management, financially incite them to hire a certain type of people.
One point that I can imagine what might come up is like, yeah, okay, I can set the goal to become, to double the numbers, so become from 8% to 16% or even more. But still, I then have I do need to have the opportunities as well.
So the pipeline,
And startup-wise, especially in our terms, when I look in fields of technology, tech, the pure number of female founders is not that big. Is that what do I do with a situation like that?
Well, I mean, you can see, I mean, unfortunately, I don't have the data about the Swiss market, but if you have the data about the Swiss market, maybe you can see if 8% is actually the percentage of, you know, female-founded startups in Switzerland, or if you're above or behind, you know. For example, for France, I would tell you that at 8%, you're really behind the market, because it's already 24% of companies that are female-funded. So it means you, if you were in France with 8%, you would have a bias, right? But of course, we've been hearing this question of pipeline a lot, and that's kind of the thing which investors hide behind, saying, yeah, we can't invest because there's no pipeline. And we realize that when they set goals for themselves, they actually find the pipeline, you know. So it's also, how do you source your startups? You know, do you expect introductions from your network, for example, and maybe your network is male only, so you only get male startups? You know what I mean? Like, try to think of your sourcing. I'm pretty sure that in Switzerland there are great organizations doing events with female founders. Is your CVC team attending those events enough, meeting the, you know? So it's all about, so I really think that the pipeline is getting there. I mean, we see clear data that women are funding more and more startups, but it's how you go and source them. And if you set goals, people are going to get creative, especially if they're financially incentivized to reach those goals. They're going to get creative and, you know, find the good opportunities. And there's actually a lot of data that shows that you're going to make greater return on investment with women, because less people are gonna look at their pitches, at their decks, and you're gonna, if you're the first one to get there, you'll end up with more money, because you know it's underrated profiles actually, because you know that all the rest of the VCs are super biased. So if you go reach them in an unbiased way, I mean, there are studies that show that you're gonna make higher return on investment. So it's really interesting to do so. So yeah, I would say measure, set goals, incentivize your team one way or another to reach those goals, and you know, make it a collective adventure. You know, I think it's super important for an employer as the Swiss Post to be attractive, right? And I think if you tell your people, we really want, you know, to be a diverse company, we want to hire, to invest in diverse teams, blah, 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 it's super motivating for the people that are working there. You're going to have better retention, you're going to have more people applying, you're going to have people staying longer. So it's going to be a win-win at the end of the day.
Cool.
So what are you going to do, Khalil?
Well, what I definitely will do is, I don't need to push them. They will listen to this episode. So the VC team, they will definitely listen to this episode. I'm pretty sure about that. Okay, so thank you very much. I got these advices, and I would like to go to the finish line. And I have three quick questions for the end. You mentioned it several times. As a founder, what is probably the most important point in my killer pitch deck?
It depends on the stage you're at, so it's hard to answer.
Let's say I'm a seed.
I can't say one, there are various, but you need to know the depth of your market, and you need to know clearly what is the market share you're reaching out, because this is such an important key point for VCs. You need to be super clear about your vision. You need to show how you're different from the competition. So don't pretend there's no competition and you're the first one to do that, it's probably wrong. So see what the competition does and show them how you differentiate. And you need to show that you have a killer team. And by a killer team, I mean a team that is that people are different enough to be complementary to each other.
And that's probably an advice not only for founders, but also for every project lead, innovation manager in a corporate or wherever they work, basically.
Yeah, absolutely.
It's not only for founders, a general thing. Cool. When I'm a founder and I do want to become part, or I would like to have a VC in my fund which is at least aware of this topic of biases and want to actively work on that, and probably I don't find the sister logo on their page, and I don't know that they are part of the community or somewhere. Or a similar community, how can I actively recognize and know that they are aware and work on that?
Oh, you'll know. Oh. I mean, no, but basically, when women go to CVCs, it's whether the interview goes well and everything's absolutely normal, or it goes badly.
And me as probably, you know, as a man.
And you as a man. You can challenge them, I guess. You can ask them if they have the data, if they have set goals, and what do they do for women founders. I think, I mean, just asking the question quite directly would be my greatest advice. Then, of course, I mean, they can lie to you, but if you're smart enough and ask the right question, you'll end up noticing if they're serious about it or if it's just, you know, a communication thing.
At the Espas Lab entrance, we reserved some space for you. Which quote may we note there?
Well, thank you so much for that. That's really cool. So there's a quote I tell my team a lot, so maybe that could inspire yours as well. It's do things seriously without taking yourself too seriously.
How did you figure out that?
I don't remember, but I know it's been following me for a few years. I'm someone who likes to laugh and who likes, you know, to have a light work environment. I like, you know, to have joy around me when I work. But, you know, it doesn't mean that we're not doing things seriously. So I think, yeah, do things seriously without taking yourself too seriously. It's a good mantra to be efficient and also have a nice work environment.
Do things seriously without taking yourself too seriously. Deborah Loy, thank you very much.
Thank you so much for having me, Halil. Have a good day.